Okay, we are back on this Monday, February 28th, 2011. My name is Aaron Dykes. I'm filling in for Alex, who incidentally will be popping in later in the hour. But right now we go to James Corbett, who's an independent journalist who's been living and working in Japan since 2004. You may have seen his website, CorbettReport.com. He's been writing and producing The Corbett Report, an independent listener-supported alternative media and information source since 2007. His forthcoming book, Reportage, Essays on the New World Order, will be available for purchase in early 2011. And we're going to bring him up right now to get more into the Middle East and what's going on with the New World Order in general as he chronicles nearly all the same subjects we do and in great detail. James, are you there?
I am here, and thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, helping to drive the tip of the spear even further into the heart of the New World Order. And it's so important right now, as you know, as the globalists are upsetting the geopolitical grand chessboard so that they can put the pieces back on the board in their own favor.
Well, thanks, James. It's an honor for me to be here, too. I'm filling in for rather big shoes, but I'm doing the best I can. What do you think is most important right now in the Middle East as we see North Africa, the peninsula region, and really that whole area just west of Iraq all unfolding into crisis, and the looming question, will worldwide rise in unrest, culminate?
Well, it's a good question, and it's one that's absolutely vital for us to deal with right now, because although I've seen some great coverage of this in the alternative media that seems to be casting a skeptical eye to what's going on, unfortunately, I don't see that filtering down to a lot of the people that I see on a daily basis here. And it's unfortunate to me that there are so many people who are buying into this rather unquizzically, just that they're toppling dictators in the Middle East, so everything's going to be sunshine and rainbows and lollipops. But of course, we know that this is part of a much, much greater plan and an agenda that's unfolding right now. And it seems to me that, to take a Hansel and Gretel analogy, the globalist-controlled corporate and foundation-funded media loves to create these houses of candy for us out in the woods, because we're lost and starving, and we've come across this house made of candy. Oh, it looks so good. Let's go and eat it, and we'll stay in it. And this nice little old lady comes and invites us in, and of course, she just wants to shove us into the oven and eat us. And that's, to me, is the analogy of what's going on here. Of course, they're going to create these wonderful looking events that are going to be all about peace and democracy, even as they're at the exact same time about bombing people, in other countries, exact continuation of the neocon agenda. But most people on the left side of the false left-right paradigm won't really catch on to that. And it's unfortunate to me, because it seems there is a geopolitical grand chessboard, and it is being used to play this great game. And unfortunately, the public is trapped playing checkers while the globalists are playing chess. And if that's the case, I mean, we're going to lose every single time. But it seems to me there is an elephant in the room here, and it's a billion-person elephant in the room, and it's called China. And I think that, to me, is what a lot of this is aimed at, and we can see it in country after country where this destabilization is happening, from Yemen to Egypt to Libya. And I've got some articles here that showcase what's going on pretty well. All news that's happening in very recent times that has to do with these countries and these dictators that are being toppled now. Of course, all of these dictators are being propped up by the U.S. and with U.S. aid, and have been in power because they have been serviceable puppets to the U.S. But the question is, have they been the greatest puppets, and can better puppets be installed? So if you take a look at the Jamestown Foundation, for example, they have an article, Burgeoning China-Yemen Ties Showcase Beijing's Middle East Strategy. And it talks about how Hu Jintao has just invited President Ali Abdullah Saleh over to China for an historic six-day summit to talk about expanding ties between China and Yemen. And it says here, China's stake in Yemen, however, goes far beyond the energy and trade spheres. Beijing is determined to strengthen its role as an emerging political and diplomatic player in the Middle East. Beijing's diplomatic and economic overtures to Yemen provide a glimpse into China's grand strategy in the region. And surprise, surprise, now Ali Abdullah Saleh is in trouble because because people are trying to overthrow him. You go to Egypt, you have Mubarak, who of course was propped up with USAID, the second largest recipient of USAID, so was a U.S. serviceable puppet for the, not the Americans, of course, but the New World Order that controls the American government. And you go back to, you can even go to the State Information Service, sys.gov.eg, and you can get a report, Mubarak, China-Africa Partnership to Achieve Peace Development. And it talks about a conference that was happening in 2009. Mubarak hosted Hu Jintao and a Chinese delegation as they're talking about expanded Chinese-African cooperation. And then when you go to Libya, of course you're talking about oil. And it's not so much that the New World Order needs to control that oil for themselves, it's that they need to stop it from falling into the hands of the Chinese, because obviously China is the billion-person elephant in the room, and it's consuming oil at a great rate. So controlling China's oil reserves is an extremely important part of this game. So you can go to thestreet.com. They have an article from the 24th of February of this year, China Oil Company attacked in Libya. So you have these spontaneous protests of people who want to overthrow the dictator who are also attacking Chinese oil companies. So it seems to me in country after country, there seems to be a certain direction that these are heading in. And I'm not saying this is the only thing that this is about, but I think that there is some aspect of the geopolitical great game being played here.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of aspects, because you have China also trying to squelch their own protests right now. People trying to bring in, I guess, so-called democracy. But that's really the problem. It's brand democracy that we're trying to so-called export from our foreign policy. The Bush had rhetoric about it. The Bush administration had rhetoric about it. Obama's continuing that. And we see that through these NGOs that we know are on the playing field in the Mideast. And then we have all the revelations that Lindsey Williams brought to the program last year about how they want to stop the oil trade, let these prices go up. We've seen some skyrocketing already with the oil prices. But as you pointed out, it's really this geostrategic plan to hold out for the end game. We've got all this stuff in Alaska. We've got more energy there to last us probably for a millennia. But as you say, it's about challenging China's authority to that energy, even as we have all our own domestic problems with China and the debt.
Right, exactly. And to a certain extent, the whole Chinese thing is a smokescreen. I mean, we run the risk sometimes of being so close up to the painting that we're looking at each brushstroke as it happens so that we understand exactly how the painting is being painted. But we have to take a couple steps back to see the bigger picture and see what's actually being painted. And in this case as well, of course, the Chinese, American, I hate to even say American, because of course it's the New World Order, the globalist control over the American government, but the tensions that are going on and the interplay is to a certain extent a smokescreen, because we know that the Chinese have been built up by the New World Order, the very same New World Order who have created the economic collapse, that have created the destabilizations throughout this region and throughout Europe as well. So it's all a smokescreen at a certain level, and we know that Rockefeller gave eulogies to Chairman Mao in the New York Times, saying it was a great experiment that, oh, by the way, just happened to kill 60 million of his own people conservatively. Or you have the Clintons back in the 90s, of course. Bill Clinton himself personally approving the transfer of advanced nuclear technologies to China. You have all sorts of ways in which the New World Order has been building up China, and now you have Soros going around saying China will be the engine of the New World Order, and he even uses that term. I mean, if people don't believe me, just Google it, just YouTube it. It is out there, Soros, New World Order. He's talking about China being the engine of the new system that they're working to bring about. And of course it's Soros and Brzezinski and people like that who are behind these types of color revolutions. So it's all one big circle that unfortunately is drawing us further and further into the globalist grasp.
Sure, and you have back in the 70s with Kissinger and the Nixon era, all their diplomacy in China was just about triangulating China to kind of pivot off of Russia as they play for control in that region, in the subcontinent region of Asia and the Middle East area. Can you comment more on the actual grand chessboard and the whole arc of instability in that region? We know the things Brzezinski and Kissinger and others have talked about. Where does China fit in terms of playing that actual chess game?
Well, an excellent question. And I think there is the near term and the long term. I think what we're seeing is the beginnings of a quiet, at this stage, it's quiet and behind the scenes, but the beginnings of a type of Cold War situation where I think it's going to be about trying to gobble up and grasp control of the various oil reserves and mineral reserves, especially in Africa. I think the New World Order controlled American government has been looking for a toehold in Africa for a while now to try to keep the Chinese out, because there's a lot of resources, especially in the North African region where all this destabilization is happening right now, that China has been looking at and attempting to acquire over the past couple of decades to feed their growing industrial engine. So I think that's what this stage of the game is about right now. It's a very under the radar type of Cold War scenario that's shaping up. But I think the longer term, what we're seeing is in the similar way to the Cold War itself, which to a certain extent was smokescreens, because as we know, the globalists were controlling and funding both sides of that phony crisis as well, in order to perpetuate a system where A, there's a constant threat of outside intervention and force. Therefore, there has to be the perpetual military industrial complex. And then B, at a greater extent, when the Cold War really creates the Hegelian dialectic, where you have two forces playing off against each other, and the result is a synthesis between the two. So you see the Sovietization of America and the capitalization of the Soviet Union bloc, and that's the same thing they want to set up with China, I think.
All right, we have the music coming in, but we are going to get more into the geostrategic game that's going on in the Middle East and the other areas when we get back. Infowars.com. Okay, we are back on this Monday, February 28, 2011 broadcast. My name is Aaron Dykes. I'm filling in for Alex, who will be back tomorrow, and he'll be on the show later in this hour. Right now, we're on with James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com. And before the break, James raised a very interesting point paralleling this back to the Cold War. And I really think in many ways the Cold War was not only against the Soviet Union, but it was a classic dialectical excuse to invade all kinds of parts of the third world countries. You know, most of the countries in Latin America went through revolution, coups, or destabilizations in that Cold War period. Many, if not most, of the countries in Africa went through the same phase. Many of the countries in Asia, East Asia, all along the Arc of Crisis in particular, all suffered regime change and real pressure from both the West and the Soviet sphere during the Cold War. And this isn't the time to make the argument that the Soviets were propped up by the West and that they were kind of a paper tiger. But more than anything, it was an excuse to say, well, these are dictators in this part of the Latin American world. These are dictators in Africa, but they're pro-West, so that makes them democratic, and at least they're not communist. Or we have to invade this country, or the domino effect is going to take over, and we're going to see communism spread throughout the region. That kind of dialectic really gives an easy excuse for the U.S. and NATO, to go into these regions. And today, it's just as easy with the economic disaster, with the humanitarian crisis agenda. And so, James Corbett, what do you think about that? Can we flesh out some more of the Cold War parallels?
Well, exactly right. And it's important for people to understand that it's not just a dialectic. It's a completely false dialectic. It gives people a false choice. So it might lead some people to think that if I'm against the wave of protests and destabilization happening in the region, that means that I'm in favor of the dictators or something along those lines. Of course, that's not the case. But it makes everyone choose sides in a phony game that's rigged from the beginning, so that no matter which side you choose, that you're going to lose. And that's unfortunately the way they often set these types of things up, because they understand, unfortunately, that the majority of the public is playing checkers while they're playing chess. And when that's the case, we're just going to lose every single time. So we have to be a bit smarter about this and understand that when the people in the $3,000 suits being paid $50 million a year with their 10,000 watt smiles get on camera and tell you how wonderful everything in this region is, we know that they are being paid to say that because it's serves the interests of the people who are paying them. And it's a pretty simple point, but it's one that a lot of people don't seem to take into account. So so this destabilization does help, unfortunately, the globalist interests that are really in the long term only interested in melding the entire thing into one united world government, which of course we know is the big end game of all of this. So again, it's not in our interest to concentrate too much on the individual things that are happening without taking into account the bigger picture. And I think that bigger picture is revealed in the institutional framework for world government, which is being set up all around us and is already so deeply underway that that most people would be shocked if they really started to take a look into it. And that institutional framework is of course brought in through the governmental organizations, the international governmental organizations that are governmental in all but name, from the IMF to the UN to the World Trade Organization. And it's represented in things like that story about the TSA with the genetic screening and the genetic pat downs that of course relates back to the newborn babies getting their blood taken at birth, for DNA databases going into a Pentagon DNA database that Alex Jones has been talking about for 15 years, and the mainstream media is finally catching up to let people know about it. And they're a perfect example of a system that's being instituted across the world at the exact same time in country after country, and it's being done by secret agreement, handshakes done behind closed doors that the public never sees about, never hears about, doesn't learn about for until 30 years after it's already started.
Yeah, that's right. It's a coordinated continuity of agenda that was planned long ago, implemented from the top at the United Nations global level and implemented in the various countries. And it's very interesting to me that with the worldwide economic crisis, which was caused through globalism, through all these countries being centered together as if they were under the fascist emblem, and how this has spread. Now we have the price of food is at the heart of the wave of these revolutions. How will they use the economic crisis to cause further crisis? More on that when we get back with James Corbett. I'm Aaron Dykes. This is InfoWars.com. This Monday, February 28, 2011 broadcast. I'm Aaron Dykes, filling in for Alex Jones. He should be coming on at the end of this segment. We have James Corbett of the Corbett Report for one more segment. A couple odds and ends here. I just want to mention that the last World War I veteran has died. Frank Buckles, the last U.S. World War I veteran, has died. A spokesman for the family said Sunday he was 110. Definitely a milestone, the last survivor of that globalist contrived war, which has led us into the paradigm of global government for the 20th and 21st century. Not only do we have protests throughout the Middle East, we have China uses whistles, water, and police on protesters. That's in the AP. We have Bernie Madoff tells New York Magazine government itself is a Ponzi scheme. And that brings us into how the globalists have used this economic crisis to fuel greater revolutions throughout the region that will only come back around on the U.S. and other Western nations, including the price of food and the price of oil. James Corbett, what are your takes on how they've used our worldwide economic crisis to fuel greater events?
Well, not just how they've used it, but how they've constructed it. Exactly. You can look back, of course, at the repealing of Glass-Steagall and how that created the derivatives bubble, which unfortunately now is just a mind-boggling number, whatever it is, however many quadrillion it is at this point. It's more than all of the assets in the world combined. So they have this giant derivatives bubble of totally imaginary wealth that they've created out of nothing, which is now set to pop and deflate and be the final straw that breaks the back of the world economy. And again, this is something that has been envisioned and thought about for a long time. And again, I would direct people back to Carol Quigley and writing about how the secret agreements reached with the Bank of International Settlements and its various arms, the Central Bank of Central Banks, as it's referred to, and how it, through a series of secret agreements, will come to dominate the world system a complete one-world system of economic control. And, of course, now we see it during the economic destabilization, the IMF coming up and saying, oh, hey, well, we've got the world currency that can bring stability back to the destabilized world order. We can provide a new world order of a new world currency, exactly as people have been talking about in the alternative media for decades, and as, unfortunately, reality is just catching up to.
Yeah, and it's a real shame. There's really no doubt that they are building China to be the next global government engine as the U.S. winds down at the expense of the U.S., as the U.S. will be broken by these energy crises, as they absorb all the remaining independent forces of economic, as they take over everything. It's just really frightening. Your thoughts, Corbett?
Well, I agree with that assessment. It's unfortunate, but it's true. It's an analogy that I've heard before, that it's kind of like the elite globalists are these parasites that'll go and lay their eggs inside of a country and hatch and infest that country and use it as an engine for itself to go out and spread and propagate. And then once that host is a carcass, is a shell, is starting to decay, they'll just break out and fly over to some other new host and invade that. And that seems to be exactly what's going on. America was the engine for the New World Order system to move the ball further down the field, and now that America is being taken down by design, the Chinese model is being brought in. And of course, we know the Chinese model is all about mobile forced abortion vans and complete control and harvesting the organs of prisoners and all of this, which, surprisingly enough, they didn't talk about on Hu Jintao's recent state visit to America. No, they put up Chinese flags all down the in Washington, because he's just such a great, wonderful leader, just like Mao was, right?
But then going back to the Middle East, if this whole thing isn't globalist contrived, somebody sure propped up the dominoes in a very convenient fashion, so that all this stuff would trigger itself to all come to the surface at the same time. Going back to Brzezinski and his plans for geopolitical domination of the grand chessboard, we have Tony Cartolucci wrote an article last week called The Path to Persia, which basically deals with a lot of the stuff Brzezinski has been planning for a couple years. Brzezinski and Defense Secretary Robert Gates wrote a paper in, I believe, the latter part of 2007, 2008, really dealing with how Iran would most likely not see a direct military intervention, but really they would kind of circumvent through a secondary route, really a lot of it dealing with these kind of popular uprisings, and it just matches perfectly with this color revolution tactic, the so-called Twitter protest, and they are happening in Iran, and we know Iran is the key piece on that area in the on the chessboard, in terms of getting to that latter stage where China becomes superior and whatever happens to the U.S. happens. What do you think about the Brzezinski path to Persia?
Right. Well, it's important to understand that the Brzezinski method is not to attack your enemy directly, but to use the various pieces on the board to your advantage to get someone else to destabilize your enemy for you. And of course, that's exactly what the color revolutions are. And of course, there are all sorts of other underhanded ways in which war can be waged without being directly at war. And we see that, for example, with the Stuxnet worm that was created by American Israeli intelligence and used to destabilize the Iranian weapons program. So again, there's all sorts of things that are going on under the table and behind the scenes that are, of course, more important than what we're being fed through the palatable pap of the mainstream media.
And Stuxnet's a very interesting example, because it's an admitted tool of war, albeit not directly violent. But the response to it is that we're supposed to have cybersecurity at home now, that they're going to clamp down on the internet and potentially curtail freedoms and direct access because of things like the Stuxnet, which we know are coming right out of foreign policy and the Defense Department. And as you mentioned, U.S.-Israeli intelligence, it's just amazing how they build one crisis upon another, and it's all set to react on this map. And the things happening in the Middle East are happening here at home too, in whatever form. I don't know if it's going to be the way Farrakhan sees things, but it's already happening in Wisconsin and other parts.
it's so right, and it's so important for people to understand that these weapons that are being supposedly constructed to combat the enemies, which themselves are being propped up by the globalists, are always also directed at ourselves. I mean, that's the point of these types of crises and these types of weaponry and all the things that are being developed, is that whatever you see being used against your enemy, at some point, unfortunately, the globalist-controlled governments are going to try to use against themselves as well, because that's the way they construct these crises. So you see Stuxnet worm being used as a way to say, well, look, these types of things can be constructed, so now we have to create this overarching cybersecurity bill, which, oh, by the way, can let us have a kill switch over the internet. But it's bad when Egypt uses it. It's great if we have that option, though. So again, yes, absolutely. Every crisis is aimed outwards and inwards. It's like the TSA. Do they really need genetic screening of people coming into the country? No, they don't. But what is that about? It's about creating the genetic screening control grid based on these database technologies that, of course, is part of the eugenics program, which I know you're extremely well familiar with, because I know some of the articles you've written about the eugenics agenda.
Yeah, the eugenics agenda seems to never end. It goes back more than a century, and we're just seeing neo-eugenics now. But, of course, that's a whole other topic. But, yeah, the DNA thing is very frightening at TSA, and we know it does fit into larger paradigms, particularly to watch is Bill Gates Foundation and everything they're doing with these vaccines. But what else is on your radar right now, James Corbett? What else have you been reporting on recently?
Well, there's so much to report on, but even just touching on the Gates Foundation and the things they're doing with the vaccines and the way they're promoting this genetic screening technology and all of that, well, one way to look at that is through the paradigm of what the foundations are and how they came into existence and what they're really about. So I would urge people who have not done so to take a look at the work, the testimony of Norman Dodd, and G. Edward Griffin did such a landmark interview with him in the early 1980s that's now completely available for free viewing on the net, you know, through YouTube or whatever. And people there, unfortunately, it's a travesty that so few people have watched it, but just startling testimony from this man who was on the head researcher for a congressional committee in the 1950s called the Reese Committee, which was looking into the tax exempt foundations of the robber barons, the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and the Fords and the others, who had set up these foundations to use as an arm of control, even as they're hiding under the guise of philanthropy. And his testimony about what he found in the meeting minutes for the founding of the Carnegie Endowment in 1908, and what they were talking about and how they decided that the best way to manipulate society is to get America into a war. So then they started deliberating about what would be the best way to get America into a war. And then, of course, by 1917, they were involved in World War One. And again, it's just all part of this manipulation that's going on at a scale that few people would even begin to imagine unless they're really seeking out this information. But it is there and it is available, and people need to start using the tools that we have right now to arm themselves with the knowledge that we need to win.
Yeah, and it's amazing how deep this strategy does go. By the way, we have an interview exclusive for PrisonPlanet.tv with Charlotte Isherby, where she does talk about a lot of these Norman Dodd tax-free foundation hearings. But bottom line, our country is basically a farce. It was taken over long ago by these tax-exempt foundations, and it'd be bad enough if they were operating independently, but they are clearly coordinated with the United Nations, which the Rockefeller family themselves helped set up. Then they have their own foundation and the other foundations that seem to do the work for them. They come up with these strategies, and then they globally implement them in a coordinated fashion, top down into these various countries. Particularly all throughout the West, you see things implemented in the U.S. at the same time as Britain, Australia, Canada, other parts of Europe. And we've been taken over by these foundations. What we think is our constitutional government has been completely thwarted. And until we as a larger nation wake up to that, we can't get our constitution back, because we think things are still going along hunky-dory, problems here and there. But really, we were sold out a long time ago. James?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So people can look into things like the ID card issue and how the UN has had their conferences and come up with protocols to standardize ID cards throughout numerous countries. So a couple of years ago, everyone in America was talking about the real ID and how, what a terrible travesty that would be to come in to create this national ID database that would be another part of the control grid. Well, it's already in place and functioning in numerous countries, and we have this standardized ID that is really an international ID database that's just waiting to be actualized. It's already the protocols are already set up, the standards are in place, and country after country is implementing it, again quietly behind the scenes, international agreements that few people have any idea about, but there are researchers out there that are providing valuable information on that. And for example, I've talked to Nathan Allenby, a researcher in the UK, who wrote an excellent article about the way the ID cards are being brought in as an international on an international basis without people really understanding what this is really about.
Yeah, and look to Egypt. Look to India, where they're implementing the biometric thumbprinting and the other DNA-based stuff. And then you've got Gandhi. His whole revolution started being against thumbprinting, being against biometric and ID cards way back, you know, nearly 100 years ago. And yet this stuff is happening, and it's true. It's coordinated all the places you say. Anyway, we thank you for your time, James. We have Alex on the line, and we're going to go to him now. Really appreciate your insights as we try to figure out this Middle East and everything else that's going around the world. Thank you, James.
Thank you.